This weekend starts right after this.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. Geico has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Election year exhaustion. I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. Final weekend before Election Day. Glad you could spend some time with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
As Election Day nears, many Americans can't wait until it's over. Hear what psychologists are calling election exhaustion and what can be done about it.
On the tech front, websites and apps to consult if you're in the market for a new home.
On the food front, the state making the claim that it's the cheese dip capital of America.
And with Election Day this coming week, a look at the unusual jobs held by U.S. presidents.
Harry Truman was actually a store owner as a retail manager per our jobs rated report. I owned a haberdashery after World War One, which for those who are unfamiliar, think the brick and mortar version of Amazon.
Kyle Kensing at careercast.com has a look at what former presidents did to earn money before they became commander-in-chief. He's here later in the hour. Well, here's some baseball analysis being applied to the presidential race. Just like the exciting World Series, the presidential election has taken a surprising turn. Seems like it's going all the way to the last game. It's a story from James Pendle, political reporter at the Boston Globe. James, how do you see this?
Well, look, I mean, there are a lot of parallels between the presidential race and the World Series right now. I mean, just a few days ago, you thought the Cubs were left for dead. They were down 3-1. Obviously, the Indians were going to win. It was highly predictable that that's the way this was going to play out. And then the Cubs came roaring back, and they got some momentum. The same way with the presidential race. We thought for sure Donald Trump was sort of done, particularly, say, like last Monday. The presidential race was highly predictable, and that's about it. Then, of course, the FBI had different plans, announced their bombshell on Friday, and suddenly we're now heading to a race into the final stretch here.
Can you recall, say, not so much 4 years ago, I guess, but 8 years ago when we were guaranteed a new president? What were things like then?
Well, I mean, it was just such a different atmosphere. Yes, at some level, and we're talking about, of course, the 2008 election. At some level, we thought that the race was obviously slipping away from John McCain. We were in the middle of a financial crisis that John McCain was not perceived to do very well for, and the fact that Republicans and the Republican president, who was highly unpopular at the time, was kind of blamed for the crisis that was taking place. But the thing that I remember the most, and yes, we can talk about the context that the race was really slipping away and kind of predictable that Barack Obama was going to win, but the thing I remember the most is just, you know, how good we felt about our presidential candidates. You know, John McCain, if you disagreed with his policies or disagreed with Republicans, was clearly an American hero and had a great life story. And you felt good about the fact that about Barack Obama, even though he was, you know, you could disagree with him again on his policies or the Democratic Party, but the idea that you could have the first African-American president just made you feel good about the country. I don't think there are that many people right now feeling good about the situation in the country.
It's unbelievable. We're speaking with James Pendle, political reporter at the Boston Globe. His piece is called "This Presidential Race is Going to Game 7. You know, kind of based on your experience then, on November 9, November 10, 2 days, 3 days after the election, given the nature of this particular campaign, does a healing begin?
No, it gets worse.
How's that possible?
I wish I could say that, you know, it's going to be all over and it's going to be all better soon. But let's think about, honestly, the likely scenario that will take place on election night. And a real loss and confidence of American democracy. And I don't think I'm being overdramatic about it. If Hillary Clinton wins, which she is still likely to do, Trump and a lot of his supporters may not accept that premise. She may say that she's actually legitimately elected. They may point to different things to say it was rigged. If, as it looks likely right now, that Republicans may be able to keep the Senate majority because largely of the FBI last Friday and creating doubts and voter enthusiasm among Democrats, then you're going to find Democrats saying, you know what, this whole thing was rigged and I'm not going to accept the process. You're going to have a president, no matter which one it is, that's going to be investigated for the next 2 years, maybe being a one-term president, maybe unable to get anything passed through Congress because the majorities will be so slim. So we've hit the executive branch, we've hit the legislative branch. There's also the judicial branch, which we've now learned in the last couple of days that Republicans say that if Hillary Clinton's elected, they want to make sure that a ninth judge is not ever put on the court, and that you're going to have a stalemate of an eight-person, 4-4 court on the Supreme Court. This could be a really bad situation for years now. If you thought this process was going to be over, I'm sorry.
Thanks, James. James Pindle, political reporter at the Boston Globe. So this time next weekend, right, we'll likely be talking about our new president-elect. But in the meantime, if you're counting down the hours until the presidential election campaign is over, welcome to the club. A Pew Research Center survey found that about 6 in 10 Americans felt exhausted with the amount of election coverage. It might seem funny, but election exhaustion is real, and it appears to have shown up in everything from psychiatrists' couches to the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Here's Laura Petreca at USA Today. Laura, what do we have?
People are tired of arguing with friends and family members. They're tired of really negative campaigns. They're just exhausted.
You know, it's interesting. You or somebody in the story used the phrase tiptoeing. They were tiptoeing around for how many hundreds of days now, it seems, right?
Oh, definitely. And that was a psychologist that I spoke to, and she said it's mentally exhausting when you have to really be on your best behavior all the time, because it is very easy to set someone off if you say the wrong thing. Someone may be supporting a candidate and you don't realize they are, and you say something negative about that candidate, and suddenly you're in the workplace having an argument.
Man, oh man. So how tough is it, I guess, at some of the American workplaces for people actually just yelling at each other? I don't experience that where I am, but I can imagine that goes on.
It really is tough, and there's been studies out there that show that people have had arguments at work with others about politics, that it's stressing people out. The American Psychological Association just put out a survey that said more than half of Americans say the election is giving them a significant source of stress. So it's pretty bad. And by the way, that survey was done this summer before a lot of the recent things came out, the recent news about things.
Right. All right. So as you point out, part of the issue here is that our campaigns in the U.S. are just so long, right? I mean, we're beyond a year and a half, right?
Exactly. So it's been going on for a really long time. And adding to that, we have social media, 24/7 news cycles. There's information everywhere. So we've got this prolonged campaign, but we also have the fact that all the news about the campaign is at our fingertips all the time. A lot of people sleep with the phone next to their bed. They're checking it before they go to sleep at night. They're checking it in the morning. So you're always seeing the news updates. You're getting it on your iPhone, but then you're also getting it at the lunchroom table. And then when you go home for dinner at night, you're talking about it again.
Wow. We're speaking with Laura Petreca, senior editor of Special Projects at USA Today. Her piece is called "Even Psychologists Are Seeing Exhaustion," talking about this election season. What can be done? Is there some sort of cure, or we just have to hold on till next Tuesday?
You know what? There are things that people can do, and there's actually lots of different things that people can do. One thing is to take a news fast once in a while. You don't need to watch hours and hours of cable TV at night. You don't need to be checking your phone for the latest alerts from USA Today, even though that's terrific to do, but it is healthy to take a break from the news.
Right.
If it's a family member or a friend or a colleague, anything, a person's talking about politics and you're not comfortable, think of an exit plan. Have a strategy. You can say, you know what, I've heard so much about the elections, I need a little break from this. Or you can say, if you're in the middle of talking to somebody that has a different point of view, I agree to disagree. So there are steps that you can do, definitely taking a break, having a plan, getting outside, getting some perspective, spending time with your kids or grandkids, thinking about the big picture. So there are things that we can do so we can feel healthier and more energized while we're being bombarded by all of this information.
What can it actually do to us, this exhaustion?
Oh my gosh. It not only does it stress you out, it can make you short-tempered, right? So certain people are worried about the election. They have anxiety, so they're not sleeping well. And then they get up in the morning and they don't have a good night's rest. And then they're on edge. So there's lots of physical things that can happen to you if you're not taking care of yourself, if you're letting anxiety get to you. And if it really gets to the point that it's becoming debilitating, it's important that someone seeks help. And I'm a big believer in professional help, but even the first step could be to talk to a trusted friend or a family member and to say, you know, I'm really feeling anxious about all of this, and let's talk it through, because it's better to address your concerns than to stuff them away and just have them build up inside of you.
Wow. So maybe there's a fine line here. So the people who don't sleep well, these are people who are, I guess, really sort of live and breathe politics, but are they consumed or distracted by what others are saying and like the noise in the background, or are they actually concerned about who is going to actually win the election?
So based on the reporting I've done, it's both. People are worried about who's going to win the election. They're concerned about the country, but they're also getting really riled up about what friends and family members are saying, and especially on social media. If you look on your Facebook feed, you can see posts from a cousin that really get you angry, and then you have to decide in that moment, do I want to engage with this person, or do I not want to engage with this person? So it's both. It's worrying about the country as a whole, but it's also the information that we're getting. It's seeing negative ads that stress you out. Like, everywhere we turn, there's a lot of information about this campaign, and it really is rising, is really increasing the stress level among many people.
Thanks, Laura. Laura Petreca from USA Today. How can today's technology help you in your hunt for a new home? Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
If you're in the market for a new house, you may want to start your search using apps and websites. MarketWatch editor Amy Hoke knows all about what you need before you start your search. Amy, where should potential home buyers start?
Well, a good place to start are sites or apps that really help you get the basics down. There's one at Freddie Mac, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Those are great places to start because they're really going to take you through the process, how much you can afford, kind of creating a budget, and then really getting you think about the different kinds of mortgages that you might decide you want to take.
What are the latest rules on down payments and how much money you should put down these days?
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky. It's interesting. There's some data that shows that down payments are down, not quite to the low that they were right before the housing bust, but kind of getting there. And we're seeing over the past few years, the average down payment has just kind of sliding in the same way that it did between 2002 and 2006. So this is really how people are getting into homes. Home prices have gone up. There's very low mortgage rates, and you can do a lower down payment. So that's the only way people are able to get into homes if they're kind of on that border. Now, back during the housing bust, you had other creative products, like piggyback loans and interest-only adjustable rate mortgages. A lot of those products aren't available anymore. But low down payment mortgages have survived, and people increasingly are taking advantage of them. You can get an FHA loan that's very low.
Do these websites kind of jive with what banks are telling people about what they need?
Well, I mean, I think you have to be careful. I mean, you have to be careful and kind of think about how the mortgage is going to fit into your budget and what it's going to mean for the rest of your life. It might be that a bank is willing to lend you X amount, but if you actually go that route, you might have to make some sacrifices in your day-to-day life. So I think you have to be smart. You can't just go ahead and kind of take what the bank's going to give you to the extreme, because it might be that it's more than you're willing to bite off just in terms of the rest of your budget. So I think people really need to be thinking critically about what it's going to mean for them.
That being said, Amy, where are some good places to go to get mortgage calculators?
Yeah, there's really some great ones. HSH is a great website. They also have a mortgage glossary, all types of calculators on there. There's Zillow's mortgage calculator is also good. There's one called Carl Chicle's mortgage calculator that people like a lot. Some of these you can download as an app too. So it might be something you can kind of fiddle with as you're house hunting and trying to see how the price of the house might fit into your math.
We're speaking with MarketWatch editor Amy Hoke. Now, Amy, your story talks about the fact that you shouldn't put personal information in these websites when you're making the calculations. How can you see what you need to see without putting in numbers?
Well, you know, I think that with calculators, I mean, you're able to put in numbers and hypotheticals. I think where you don't want to put your personal information in is, you know, in sites that sell your information to people who want to sell you a loan. So putting in your phone number, putting in your social security number, things that are personal information that someone could get a hold of you or nag you or, I don't know, God forbid, take something and, cause some sort of fraud situation. You want to keep that all very private until you get to the point where you're working with someone and you trust the website, too.
How do you get your credit score? That's the most important thing you need when you start out, right?
Yeah, well, it's very good to know. You want to check on your credit history, so you want to make sure that the three credit bureaus have accurate data for your background. You can do that at annualcreditreport.com. Basically, what a credit score is, they look at these credit bureaus, the ratings that they the ratings that they give you, and what they have on you, and then that's how they come up with your FICO score. A lot of credit card companies in recent years have provided your FICO score for free on statements. So that's definitely the first place you want to check. I know every time I get my Discover shape statement, I look to see how my FICO has moved. So start there. If you don't have a credit card that will do that, give it to you for free, and you want to go and check it out before a lender is going to pull it for you, you want to know where you stand, then you can go to sites like myfico.com, and you're going to pay for it, but you'll know what your FICO score is before you get started.
That is this weekend's Jennifer Koschenka with MarketWatch reporter and editor Amy Hoke. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. How great would it be if the post office were open 24/7, no more limited hours, and you could get your mailing and shipping done on your schedule? Well, now you can when you use Stamps.com. Print postage whenever you need it, right from your desk. Stamps.com will save you the time and hassle of going to the post office. No more rushing there during your busy day. Just use your computer and printer to get official U.S. postage for any letter or package. Then the mailman picks it up. You'll even save money with Stamps.com. Right now, sign up for Stamps.com and use my last name, Deal, for this special offer. A 4-week trial plus a $110 bonus offer that includes postage plus a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone. It's at the top of the homepage and type in the word deal. That's Stamps.com and enter deal. Again, Stamps.com and enter the code deal. Well, when kids are exposed to negative lifestyles and grow up making poor choices, they're just products of their environment, right? Not always. Retired U.S. Navy veteran Myron Portley is author of a new book called Just One Chance. He says to live a better life, most of us have to take a chance on doing something different, sometimes radically different, something that involves a hard decision. He knows he grew up in a family with a criminal past. Myron, what's your message?
Well, I'm trying to show through my book that no matter what your circumstances are, you can always change your circumstances, and I want to reach the kids to encourage them to always dream big, and always go for your goals regardless of your circumstances.
All right. Listen, good message. I think we all subscribe to it. How do you deliver it? How do you reach the ones, though, that need to hear that message?
What I'm doing is I'm going to, like, to the inner cities and to the schools, to the prisons and jails, and setting up meetings to reach them.
You come from experience, though, right? I mean, explain your upbringing.
Yes, I was raised in San Bernardino, California, and my family was into crime and poverty, and crime is how everybody made their living. But I never wanted to live that kind of life. I just had an inner determination that wasn't going to be the life that for me.
How did you know that, though? Where did that determination come from if you were just surrounded by crime? Did somebody somewhere plant that seed?
No, I always looked around me and in my community and saw how poor it was, and I never liked it. It was just something in me I never liked. So I went and joined the Navy, even though the family, they didn't even understand why I would join the military.
Mm.
So when I was telling them I joined the military to learn a skill set, I want to do something different,
yeah,
They had no idea what I was talking about.
Is that right? So on that note, then, is the military something you'd recommend for some of these kids as a way to break the cycle?
Absolutely. There's a lot of people that you hear them that they're against the military, but the military will broaden your worldview, and it gives you a skill set. I came out of the military with being able to weld, plumbing, carpeting. So there's a lot of different skills you can learn in the military.
We're speaking with Myron Portley, retired veteran of the U.S. Navy. He's got a new book. It's called Just One Chance, and we're talking about breaking the cycle of making poor choices. What kind of pressures did you face, say, as a youth that maybe took you right to the brink of going down the wrong path?
Well, because the family was into crime, they were always pressuring me to, you know, go with them to go do this or this or go do that. So it was always a lot of pressure from the family.
Are you still in touch with some of those folks that you used to run with, but you know they're not your family, like maybe your friends or kids you grew up with in school?
I came back after I retired from the Navy, and I got in touch with some of them, but I realized that most of them they never left San Bernardino.
Yeah.
And they still live there. Some of them live like right one or two blocks from where we grew up at. They never moved. So I went over and I got in contact with them. But once I realized that mentally they had never changed, that I never reconnected with them.
And at this point, your message is lost in them, right? I mean, are you welcome there even?
No, not really, because they still don't understand what I'm trying to do. They don't understand that I'm trying to help these kids before they get a felony on them, and they just don't understand what I'm trying to do.
It's Myron Portley, retired U.S. Navy veteran. The book is called Just One Chance. It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour. On this weekend, with the first weekend of November here, it's not only time to turn the clocks back an hour in much of the country, but it's also time to start preparing your winter to-do list. Whether you're prepping for mud and moisture, insuring against power outages from, say, heavy snow, or taking care of the little things before it gets colder, home improvement expert Tom Kreitler has the latest trends on how to make your home smarter this fall. Tom, where do we begin?
Well, there's a lot of areas of your house that you could maybe take a look at. First of all, ask yourself, what are you going to do if the power goes out, Gordon? I mean, a lot of us have generators, but just as many, if not more, don't have. And the reason most people don't have generators is because they're big, they're heavy, they're expensive, they're hard to handle. Briggs & Stratton is out now with a new product called the Power Smart Series Inverter Generators. I like these because they're small, lightweight, powerful, and portable generators that really are accessible for anyone. In fact, it's so quiet you can have a normal conversation. And the reason is because of the inverter technology. That's really changed the market when it comes to generators. This inverter technology that Briggs & Stratton has, it basically changes the engine based on the power that's drawn. So you'll have plenty of power to do just what you need, but you're not going to wake up the entire neighborhood when you have to run it. You'll get enough power to provide backup for your refrigerator, your lights, your TVs, your radio, and all your smart devices, too, because another thing that the inverter generator smart technology does with Briggs is it basically creates a stable enough environment so you can plug in the smart devices like phones without worrying about any damage whatsoever. So a pretty inexpensive generator starts at about $650 and goes to about $1,300, depending on the model that you choose. But just a real nice small unit, if you don't have a generator, it would be an easy way to get one this weekend.
All right, so and it runs on gas like others?
Yeah, that runs on gas just like others. Of course, if you had a bigger generator, that could run on natural gas or propane, as well if it was, a standby or a whole house. But the point is that if you're not ready for that, at least get a small generator. This way you'll be covered in those emergency situations. And, you know, speaking of electricity, we're going to lose our power here, our daylight here pretty soon. Those days are getting shorter.
Yeah.
A good improvement to do right now might be to step up your electrical switches inside your house and replace those toggle switches with occupancy sensors. I don't know if you have these in your house. I've got four or five in mine. I love it because when you walk into the room, the lights come on, and when you leave, the lights go off. And this is a great switch for a place like a garage where you're walking in with your hands full of stuff, or when the car pulls in at night, the lights come on, or your laundry room where you're carrying that basket of clothes, or my favorite use is for kids' rooms. If you've got kids that leave the lights on when they leave their room, this will sense that there's no motion in the room and turn it off. And this is a do-it-yourself project. It takes about 15 minutes and a screwdriver to replace one of these, and you're good to go.
Then I won't electrocute myself when I'm doing it?
I don't think so. You know, just turn the power off. And I tell you what, if you open it up and you got questions, one thing that I like that Lutron has always been good is they have a call center that will walk you through. These guys are real experts.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And can tell you exactly what you need to do to get it set up.
Thanks, Tom. Tom Kreitler, home improvement expert. It's 14 minutes now in front of the hour. On this weekend, last weekend, to go over your ballot choices for Election Day this coming Tuesday. Meanwhile, the President of the United States might be the leader of the free world, but the actual job requirements are surprisingly minimal and have significantly less qualifications than most careers. A new CareerCast report finds there's no one educational or career path to follow when pursuing the presidency, and our past presidents have held some unusual jobs prior to their election. Here's online content editor Kyle Kensing at CareerCast. Kyle, give us some findings.
So obviously our current president, President Obama, everybody knows he worked as a community organizer when he first got started in the mid-80s. And that's actually a job that we track as part of our jobs rated report. So it's kind of cool. That was one that we spotlighted there. But going back even further, and some of the more unusual jobs, like one, for example, was Harry Truman was actually a store owner. As a retail manager per our jobs rated report. I owned a haberdashery after World War One, which, for those who are unfamiliar, think the brick-and-mortar version of Amazon now today.
Okay.
And then, of course, Ronald Reagan being an actor, that one everybody knows about. And it's also kind of funny when you think of 30 years now since Back to the Future and, of course, Doc Brown saying, "You mean the actor's president now?" So, you know, of course, you got that connection, too.
Right. I did not realize that that Herbert Hoover was a geologist. Can you give us a little on that?
Yeah, Herbert Hoover's an interesting one because that's a guy who wore many different hats before getting into politics. And around the turn of the 20th century, he worked extensively in mining, mostly in Oceania and Australia and New Zealand.
Wow.
Down that part of the world. And that's where he amassed quite a bit of wealth, mining for silver primarily. And geologist is one of the jobs that ranks really highly on the jobs rated report. Now it's really tied into the energy industry, but for Herbert Hoover, it was primarily mining.
Right. It makes you wonder, like, how these guys ever got interested in politics, right? Here he was, like, in Australia. He's a geologist. Like, how a guy ascends to the White House from that background?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Some of the career turns that some of these presidents have made, like Teddy Roosevelt's a great example. Like, how does that guy end up in the White House when you think that he was the former head of the New York Police Commission?
Yeah.
And that's one of the jobs that we spotlighted here, you know, his ties to the police force. He was somebody who wasn't even supposed to be president. He was governor of New York. Senator Platt didn't want him in that role anymore, so kind of encouraged him to become vice president against Teddy's will. Unfortunately, President McKinley's assassinated, and then Teddy Roosevelt ends up becoming one of the greatest presidents of all time.
We're speaking with Kyle Kensing, online content editor at CareerCast. They've put together a list called Unusual Jobs Held by U.S. Presidents. Sorry, what else jumped out here?
Let's see. Well, of course, we had, as I mentioned, the retail manager. And then that one was a failed venture for Harry Truman. And, of course, George W. Bush with Arbusto. That didn't end up going so well for him. Then he owned the Texas Rangers for a little bit, was a part owner there. So he was a chief corporate executive, which is one of our most stressful jobs. So I think once he got transitioned to the presidency, having been the head of Arbusto Energy and then the Texas Rangers, he was ready for the rigors of president, I think, in a way that you're not going to necessarily see in other lines of work.
Thanks, Kyle. Kyle Kensing at CareerCast. Interesting story, right? Barack Obama, community manager, as we know. Ronald Reagan, the actor. George W. Bush, corporate exec. Jimmy Carter, the farmer. Herbert Hoover, the geologist. William Howard Taft, the judge. Teddy Roosevelt, cop. Harry Truman, retail manager. Lyndon B. Johnson, a teacher, and Woodrow Wilson, university professor. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. When it comes to food, Arkansas has long lived in the shadow of its neighbors. You know Texas for fajitas, Louisiana for gumbo, Tennessee for its Memphis barbecue. But many Arkansans think cheese dip has finally given them something to call their own. However, the Wall Street Journal says that claim to cheese dip fame gets a quizzical response across the state line with Texas, since Texans are Pretty sure they invented cheese dip. They just happened to call it chili con queso. Meanwhile, in a safe in Little Rock, Arkansas, restaurateur Scott McGehee keeps five recipes for what he considers one of the state's biggest culinary treasures. Two cheese dip recipes were handed down by his late father. One came from the long-gone Taco Kid chain and cost him $2,000 with hot sauce and chili formulas thrown into the deal. He says the collection represents the greatest recipes in cheese dip lore. Mr. McGehee melded them at his Heights Taco and Tamale Company. He calls the concoction the Five Families Cheese Dip. Listen, when you include five families into the name of your recipe, you win. Arkansas for Cheese Dip Capital. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. Looking for the next place to grow or expand your business? Why not look to a state that's one of America's top 10 for business, where 2,000 burdensome regulations were eliminated over the past 5 years and is now home to the sixth best entrepreneurial climate. All this and more awaits you in the state of Michigan, the state that should be the number one choice for your business. Go to MichiganBusiness.org to learn more. Again, that's MichiganBusiness.org to learn more.